Welcome back. Just two more sessions to go. Animation is very short and quick, and then MBVM. So this is our continuation of our
long
sample
and painful
day.
No.
people are still around, so
very cool. So
we're,
it's
thank
great.
You for staying, and we've only got two more to go. So and this one's actually really quick. So we're going to talk about animations and transitions a little bit. I'm going to begin, you know, start from the very, very top, which is kind of what animations is and how we think about animation in SAML. And the way we think about it, and this is the way it's everywhere anyway, it's animation is nothing but cycling through just frames, right? So just taking a specific state and then cycling through that frame over a period of time to kind of create the illusion of movement or that something is going on, right? And you know, in SAML, we use it through this thing called animation timelines. And then all we're doing is we're animating dependency properties again. So the only thing that you can animate on SAML are dependency properties with regards to the elements. Now, if you have something custom, SAML does have kind of, you know, different events that you can get a callback for every time, you know, like you can say, hey, call me back every frame and I'll do my own animation. But there, you're kind of getting a callback and doing everything by hand. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be as
you're
efficient.
You're on your own. Right?
Yeah, you're on your own rolling kind of a frame callback approach. Mm-hmm. We do have the callback, so you can do it that way. But here we're going to talk about doing, you know, timelines and animations that are hardware accelerated and done through storyboards and the platforms. So so we're going to talk about that a little bit more. The only requirement is that the target be a dependency properties. And then we also have just only four specific types that we animate. Double, color, point, and object. Now, that sounds very limited when you hear, oh, there's only four types. So, but when you think about the fact that, you know, double can animate almost anything, right? If you think about, for example, width, height, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you think about the transforms, all of it, you know, animation is usually great when you do it with transforms. And all of the transforms rotate, translate, skew, all of them end up being doubles.
Yeah, and by the way, we said before that you rather want to animate a translate transform than a margin, for example, because this is going to be more, this is going to impact the layout a lot more. So really do that. And then it's all double, really. I mean, most of the properties in XAML frameworks are actually of type double.
Yep. I think with double and color, you get 99% of the scenarios. You're
probably
double is 90%. The color is probably 5%. And then you have point, which I don't use a lot. I couldn't even think of a really great example.
Well, you can do, so point is when you have a pass and then you can take one point and move it, right?
Yeah,
so it's really, if you want to do some type of animation, you know, like animations in the sense of like cartoon type things. But honestly, I never used it except for demos, really.
I used, like, for paths and cartoons, I tend to do more sequences of images than,
absolutely,
than anything else. And then object, which is kind of a discrete animation. When you're animating an object, you're just switching from one state to another. For example, animating visibility. Right, that's kind of what we use it for. So again, with double
and this
and
one
color,
is not really an animation in the sense that if you go from collapse to visible, it's not actually to go slowly, right? What it's going to do is it's going to switch, but the value of that is that if you have a timeline with multiple animations, it's actually easier to, you know, to coordinate your animations by say, oh, and at this point in time, I want this object to become visible.
Object animations are kind of a discrete switch between one state and the other. But it's still convenient to be able to use it using the same infrastructure. For example, Visual State Manager and all the other stuff. In SAML, all of our animations are time-based. So if you're familiar with some certain frameworks, for example, Flash, they use frame-based animations. So what that means is, you know, if you're running in a system that can do 30 frames per second, an animation can take, you know, 2 seconds if you were going to try to run 60 frames. In the SAML world, everything is time-based. So if you say, hey, this animation is going to take 1 second, and that animation runs in a system that's running 30 frames per second, we're going to take 1 second, and we're going to render 30 frames. If you do that in a system that's running 60 frames per second, we'll do, you know, 1 second, and we'll do 60 frames. So that's it. And then we tend to have, again, for those types, we have animation classes like double animation. And then we also have classes for keyframes. So in this case, we'll have double animation using keyframes.
Using keyframes,
would be the name of the class. And then we aggregate all of animations into this whole concept of a storyboard. Mm-hmm. And a storyboard just, it can contain multiple animations at once so that I can animate maybe two properties at once. Mm-hmm. So I can say, oh, I'm going to rotate and skew in parallel. And it's part of the exact same timeline, the exact same cloak. So here we just go back to, we have two types of animation. Linear animation is just an interpolation from one value, say 0 to 100 over time, and it's linear. Mm-hmm. So you go and you say, okay, I'm going to be, you know, halfway through at 50%, I'm going to be at 50 mm-hmm. because I'm 0 to 100. And keyframe animation, you can define kind of different keyframes and say, look, maybe we're going to start a little slow and kind of ramp up. And you can take care of a lot of these with ease in, ease out functions too.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you can ease in a linear controls. As well. But
yep.
I mean, the way I think about it is really a linear animation as opposed to using keyframe animation is simpler. And this is something that you can even write by hand. While using keyframe animation is more complex, you're going to have more objects typically which interact together. And this is something that you almost cannot write by hand. It's too complicated.
You cannot. But you'll have the tools for that. So,
exactly.
Yeah, but that's, and both of those can have easing functions. So you can have a linear animation that does have an easing function. But keyframe, you just get a lot more control.
Absolutely.
And you get a lot more functionality.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, when you edit the animation in Blend, Blend is going to optimize for you. So if Blend sees that this animation is simple enough that it should rather be a linear animation, it's going to take that simply because it's a little bit easier to read. So it's a little bit better for the human eye.
Yep.
And we are limited people.
Yeah, and from a performance and setup standpoint, obviously, there's a little bit more efficiency there. So again, we have the concept of a storyboard, which is grouping of the timelines. And then the storyboard will actually, kind of aggregate everybody. And it provides methods like begin, stop, pause, resume. And it'll be like one storyboard, like you begin everybody in parallel, or unless somebody's starting a little bit later. But if you stop it in the middle, you know, everything that's in that inside that storyboard will actually stop. So that's kind of what the storyboard does. It aggregates everything into it. After you run animation, we have this concept of a fill behavior, right? And what you're saying is, for example, let's say I run an animation, again, take a value from 0 to 100 or translate an object, you know, by 100 pixels. And then at the end of it, you can say, oh, I want my fill behavior to be hold, end, or to stop. So I can say, oh, you know, animate it from 0 to 100, but then when it ends, you go back to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just say hold it at the end and stay 100 mm-hmm. pixels off or translate it 100 pixels from where you were before. So that's it. Our animation system is very, very straightforward. It's just a matter of showing it to you in Blend a little bit and then giving you a little bit of demos and stuff. And full disclaimer here, we are running remote desktop onto a different machine, and animations are not going to look that great just because remote desktop at 60 frames per second is a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll do is I'll show you how to create the animations, and then I'll make them really long so that you can see the ease in, ease out function, so you can see.
And we'll give the samples anyway, so you'll be able to run that on your own machines and have a much better experience.
Yeah, so here it's Blend, you know, standard empty project, you know, blank application template. And so let's just go back here, and I'm just going to add an ellipse real quick. And I can animate anything here. So, like, for example, it doesn't have to be like a shape or anything like that. It could be a real control. So I'll just add an ellipse here, and I'll change the color so it's something that people can actually see. And for example, right here, what I'll do is I'll say, oh, create new storyboard. So from right here in the objects and timeline, I'll just click new, and you say, hey, you want to create a new storyboard? And I'll say, sure, storyboard one's fine for the name.
Storyboards are resources, by the way. So we talked about resources already quite a lot. We said, yes, styles and brushes and all that. Yes, that's true. But storyboards are actually resources as well.
Yep.
So you put that into your resource dictionaries, and you can use it.
Yep. And what I have here, just very much like earlier when we talked about Visual State Manager, when Loren showed you the demo, is right now I have Blend and it's not recording. So I have my timeline down here on the left right here. And I can see, you can see here, it's got my ellipse and it's got a timeline here for seconds or how long I want to take. And I'm going to try to zoom out in time. So I'll make the animations a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do anything I want here. So for example, just the simplest thing will be like, oh, over a period of a second and a half, let's have these ellipses just drop, right? So I'm just going to go back here and have it drop right there over a period of a second and a half. And you'll see right there, it's animating.
Mm-hmm. So it's not very very fascinating, I would say, as an animation. It's very linear. Yep. It's very
It's kind of boring.
It's not lifelike at all, right?
Yep. And is that any better?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yep. So sorry. I went full screen. And this is just dropping in. So there's nothing. There's nothing in here. This is just a keyframe at a second and a half. Now things get a little bit more interesting. For example, here. If I click right there, what I do is I click right here on the keyframe, and now I can control the easing function.
Yes.
So, for example, now my ball is not like this lead, because right now it feels like a lead ball that is just falling down. And the problem is when I go here, it clips me by 10 pixels. So, yeah, I can do that. So, for example, here, I can use some of the predefined easing functions that we have here, for example, bounce. Mm-hmm. So now when
so
I run
here you're
it,
going to bounce on the entering and exiting, which is probably not what you want, right? You want probably probably an in and out. So in means that it's going to bounce in the beginning.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I
you have
the wrong
you
one. Yep.
Select the correct colon, exactly. Out means it's going to bounce. No, that's bouncing in the beginning, and that's bouncing at the end, exactly.
So here is here's more realistic.
Right.
So, sorry, I'm getting clipped here, so I can't see.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just looking at it. But yeah, so here, just when the ball drops, you see right there, it kind of gave it a little bit of bounce. And again, I'm running over a long period of time because we're running it over remote desktop.
So it's really about acceleration. What easing does, it's really defining the acceleration. One thing which is good to know is that you can actually define your own easing function.
Yep, exactly.
But you have so many which are predefined that you can wonder why you don't find the one which is good for you. But you can absolutely do your own if you want. That works.
Yep. And you can see here, for example, and then once you pick an easing function, you can go back and tweak it a little bit.
With parameters.
We can go in there and tweak the key spline if you want to go there. So you can very, very much be in control. And you see here, there's lots of easing functions that come out of the box. And if you want to create something that is custom, you can just write your class and have it apply, and we can plug into the framework.
By the way, one of the great tooling experiences is that if you write your own easing function, Blend is actually going to run the function and draw the curve. So the curve is not an icon. It's actually a drawing of the output of your function, which I think is really cool from a tooling perspective.
Yep. So so that's kind of the most basic. Now, I showed you an ellipse. I want to show you an element just so you see something up. So I'm just going to save that. And let's drag something like a button. Poor button. We've been using them a lot today. But if you wanted to animate something like the canonical here, if you wanted to animate a button where it just moves up, it's the exact same thing, right? I can come back here. And so you see my previous storyboard there, store as a resource. I can just say create a new storyboard. Call it Storyboard 2, and then from here I can again record anything I want here. So I'll go here. Let me add something, and I can just move this button around the screen. So I'll just go back here and just say, at 1 second, have it be over here,
And maybe rotating, for example.
Yep, and then at 2 seconds, have it go back towards the middle. Right, and I can play it so I can see kind of what it's looking like, right? And then I can come back here, and again, I'm getting clipped a little bit, but for example, here between 2 and 3 seconds, we're going to kind of do a little bit of rotation, and you can see here, so I'm just going to say rotate it one way, right? And then at 4 seconds, rotate it the other way. And of course, a real designer or somebody with a lot more skills can do something much, much better here. Oops. So I'm
Left and right.
Yeah, I'm going the other way.
No, left and right.
Yeah, so I just wanted to come back.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I think they get the
You get the point
principle.
Right here.
You can
and I'm just dragging them over time. For a very long time. Mm-hmm. So now these are animations, and if you want to create your own animations, this is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about the phone or if you think about Windows, there's another really interesting component, which is we don't want people to be moving stuff around like this. There's some very, Windows has a very strong personality. Phone has a very strong personality. So we want people, when they go in here onto the edge, and they do this and kind of have my charms menu come up, right? We want people to get the exact same experience across all applications. We want people to have some transitions and animations that they're very familiar with, right? So for that, what we do is, for example, for phone, there's a library out there that has all the transitions. It's actually on Silverlight.
It's in the toolkit.
Yep,
it's in the toolkit. So we showed the CodePlex page before, and I told you there is a Windows Phone toolkit there. And if you download that, you actually have a I cannot remember the name right now out of the top of my head, but there is a manager which allows you to define the transitions. And like you said, Jaime, it's really using the the standard animation that you see in the operating system, and that gives a feeling of being at home for the user inside your application.
Yep. Yeah, so we took the same parameters that we use internally for the OS, and we made them into these SAML animations for Windows phones, and they're in the toolkit. You have to download them and use them, but they work, and they're just as easy as what I showed you
Absolutely.
A minute ago. And then for Windows Store, we actually do the exact same thing, but they're actually in the platform, so you don't even have to download an extra toolkit. We have all kinds of what we call theme animations, for example, fading out, fading in. And these are more complex than what I just showed you, where you're just animating the little one property and moving things around. So popping in, popping out, even transitions where you go from content showing up and content disappearing. So you have transitions here where you can say, oh, here's an entrance transition, and here's a paint transition, and you can actually go back and show all of these.
Now, I have to say, those are scenarios which are already fairly advanced in the sense that if you use the controls that are provided to you by the Windows 8 team, those have those animations baked in, right? So very often you don't even need to, to use them because they will be there anyway, right? Like, fly in, fly out, et cetera.
Yep. And for these, I'm not going to take a lot of credit because all I'm showing you is a Windows SDK sample. So I'm going to point people to these. But for example, here's a Windows SDK sample that has some of the animations on the transition. So you can see here, for example, hey, I can run a pop-in animation when something pops in, or I can see a transition, right? So I can just go back here and show the transition. Again, because we're running, I'm not going to go into it too much, because we're running over a remote desktop, it's kind of hard. So I would just encourage people to download the Windows Store SDK samples and then look for the SAML personality animation sample, and then you're going to see these exact same demo where you're maybe navigating from one place to another, because these are barely showing here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's it. Animation is very straightforward with regards to we have transitions, so that's going to take care of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want something custom, we have Blend, which you just saw me do, and it's going to make it really, really easy for people to go back and forth. And that's all I have on animations. We're not going to take a break between this session and the next one. We're just going to go back here, if I can get keyboard, onto the MBVM session.
Mm-hmm.
So you just tell us when.
All right, so it's up to me to talk to you about MVVM, and I guess it's probably no surprise. It's been a topic which has occupied me for quite a while. So what is really MVVM? And as soon as you do some XAML, you're probably at some point going to hear those four letters, and really, what is it about? So when we develop applications, there are some patterns that you keep hearing about. And MVC is the one that is really everybody heard, at some point, MVC, the model view controller pattern. So what you do is that you say, well, okay, I want to keep things a little bit separated. So until now, we did actually a lot of events, code behind, things like that. And while it works absolutely fine, and in fact, you don't need, MVC or MVVM or anything to really create an application, it gets a little bit messy after a while. It's a little bit hard to maintain, so it has a few disadvantages. MVC was one of the first attempts to respond to that, and this is a very old pattern. It was used already, I think the traces go back to 1984 with Smalltalk, which was the first really MVC-oriented framework. You have interactions. The view is what the user interacts with. The model is wherever your data come from. It could be the web, it can be a database, etc. And the controller is some kind of a powerful object which is really coordinating everything. Now, while this is working really well, and in fact it's used pretty much everywhere on the web, it's used Ruby is an MVC framework, ASP.NET MVC is obviously an MVC framework, et cetera, et cetera. So it's used a lot. iOS applications are MVC typically. When you use data bindings, there is something which is even more efficient. And before, we talked about this code that you have to write where you say, well, you know, I want to update this text box and I want to react to this event, which is a little bit annoying code to write. It's really not very, you know, very fascinating, the glue. So that's typically the controller code. when you have data binding, we actually prefer to use a different scenario where we have a model and a view, same as before, but we kind of split the controller in much smaller entities. We call that a presentation model or a view model. We have multiple of those. In fact, typically we have one per view, or sometimes we have multiple views associated with one view model, but as a rule of thumb, we bind them using data binding. So that's really the main reason why we prefer this pattern when we work with XAML. And like this, the presentation model is an object which is a little bit more passive. You don't have all this code where you say, well, okay, so in addition to setting this property, I need to notify the view that this property has changed, because we have iNotify property change, which is doing that, and data bindings are going to react to that. So this is really the basic understanding of MVVM, right? Mm-hmm. Not very complicated. You can also do data bindings, if you go back to my slides, between the view and the model. And in fact, like we mentioned before, it's actually pretty often, pretty standard that model object, even POCOs, even, you know, data objects, implement iNotify property change. Entity frameworks, proxies do that. Entities do that. WCF proxies do that. So personally, I like when I create my object, even if I deserialize some JSON, I quickly implement iNotify property change. And like this, I avoid having to encapsulate all my objects and observing them, which is a little bit difficult.
And this slide, at least the way you have it, right, it's a little controversial because, for example, some of us, like, you know, in both Xcode, or for me, both in iOS and Windows, I tend to have model and view not communicate as much.
Yeah.
So this is a very much, like I saw in the previous slide and on this one, you kind of always have this model view communication. Mm-hmm. And this is a matter of choice, right? You can definitely have a controller presentation view model here that just never, like, that the presentation view model takes care of everything,
yes,
right? And never have your model communicate to the view.
That's correct. So this slide here, so this arrow here is only yep. here because I'm a pragmatic person,
exactly.
and I like to do something else than really coding all the yep. time. So I sometimes like to have a life. This is only about that, right? It's about being a little bit faster, a little bit more efficient, a little bit more pragmatic, and accepting the fact that, okay, this introduces a slight coupling, but data binding is a very loose coupling. So it's really not that big of a deal, right?
Yep.
But it's true what you say.
Some people are privileged the way they say, like, you know, some people would have looked at the MVC diagram and said, we should never do that.
That's correct.
And then we took that same diagram, we made it MVVM. So, mm-hmm. It's just a matter of choice. I'm with you that pragmatism reigns over,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's, it depends on architecture and the requirements. So that's
exactly.
the one thing that we would
yeah.
have to
So
go
one thing to pay attention to indeed is that, yep. okay, maybe, you know, you want to avoid that depending on the constraints of your system.
Yep.
So you have obviously relationships between the view model and the model. Like I said before, data mining is really the straightforward way to have a relationship between your view and your view model. And the controversial arrow, which is still here between the view and the model,
yep.
That you may or may not want to have. But of course, there are also other ways. And one way that we are going to talk about quickly is commands. The view has to actuate something on the view model sometimes. So before we did everything with events, I'm going to show a little bit in the sample to explain a little bit why events, while they are very powerful and really used throughout the .NET framework a lot, can introduce some coupling, which can be difficult. So instead, commands are very decoupled. We are going to talk more about that in a moment. And in the other direction, you know, sometimes the view model can inform the view through a property that something changed, but sometimes it's not enough. Like, for example, think of the case where the view model would like to show a dialogue. You cannot really, well, you could in theory, but it's a little bit complicated to say, hey, let's just set a text property and that's it, right? Maybe you want to do things a little bit more finely grained. Maybe you want to start an animation, etc. So in that case, I use, for example, something I call services or view services, or maybe even some messages going between the view model and the view. I think the principle really that you want to keep in mind is that the view model should be agnostic. It shouldn't know the view at all. That's really the idea. The view, on the other hand, can know the view model. It's not really that big a deal, mostly because the view model is going to be unit tested, so you want to avoid having a view code inside your view model. The view, mostly, most of the time, you don't actually unit test the view. It's too complicated. It can, in some cases, not even be done at all.
Yep.
So it's a little bit less a problem if you have a relationship, you know, top down.
Yep. And again, to me, the emphasis is in the communication. It comes from binding.
Yep.
And then in a minute, you're going to see how, even though you're using commands, those are still bound.
It's absolutely
right?
binding.
So that
yes.
is the one thing where, like, you have this view model, which it carries all the context that you need to drive a view,
mm-hmm.
right? And that, to me, is the principle of, you know, never going to the model or mm-hmm. or and it, the principle of the view model, which
yeah.
is, and the principle of moving to commands away from events.
Okay, that's
so
absolutely
we'll see that
correct,
in your
yeah. Okay, so commands, I mentioned those. I want to underline a little bit what they do. So there is an interface which is called the iCommand interface. When you expose a command, it's a little bit like you say, well, I have a functionality and I have a point of entry for that, which is a command. Why do you want to expose that as a property? Well, mostly because you are going to use a data binding. You cannot data bind directly to a method, unfortunately, but that's the case that you have. So you have to data bind to a property, and that's the command. So it can be, and in fact, it should probably be data bound. Of course, you can also actuate commands directly in code, that works. But if you have the data binding, that's actually pretty convenient. This is an implementation of the iCommand interface. iCommand, again, like iNotify property change, has nothing to do with XAML, with WPF, or anything. It was here already before. So this is a well-known pattern, a well-known interface. It has three members. Execute, which is going to be called when the command is actuated. Whatever that means, it could be a click. You know, if you have a button and then command equals, that's going to be on the click. Or you have some more advanced scenarios with the invoke command action behavior or the event to command behavior where you can really handle any event of any object. There is a can execute method. This one is optional. You don't have to implement it, but if you do, well, optional in the sense you don't have to actually call it, right? If it is called, what is going to happen is going to evaluate the context of the command. It's going to return true or false to say, yes, the command can be executed or no, it cannot be. For supporting controls like every button, button base, radio button, checkbox, etc., the control is going to be disabled based on the value of can execute.
Yep.
And then you have can execute changed, which is an event. Now, this one needs to be raised if the value of can execute changes at some point. So if the command says, well, okay, the context has changed, I should probably notify the UI because like this, the control will be disabled. Then you can raise can execute changed event.
Yep.
In WPF, there is an object called command manager, which is actually taking care of quite a lot of things automatically. Personally, I don't use it much because I find that it is a little bit confusing sometimes. And also, it's only available in WPF. So personally, I prefer to use execute, can execute change properly. But think about it, if you go into WPF, check the documentation of the command manager object. It's a very powerful object as well.
And the one thing that I want to emphasize from what you just said is that the native controls support iCommand.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go look at button, we've been looking at button all day, and we've been using the click event,
sure.
and we've been using the content property and all that. And button has one property called command.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the box, button does, you know, it has that property already implemented,
mm-hmm.
so we're kind of ready for it. We're optimizing for it,
yep.
right? And again, button can go back into the view model and query onto the can execute and disable and enable itself.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of power just on that functionality being there.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a native design time thing that we thought about and that we actually were aiming to accomplish. So this is kind of like, again, going with the flow of where we wanted you to go.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so when you implement a command, you have to implement the iCommand interface, which is obviously quite a lot of work because for every single command, every small command, you have to implement those three members. So it can be quite a lot of work, which is why when you use a toolkit or a framework or anything, most of them have a relay type of implementation. In MVVM Lite, which is the toolkit that I maintain, We have the relay command. In Prism, they have a delegate command. There are multiple names. Most of them do the same thing. They provide a gateway between the actual, triggering of the command and a method which is going to be executed, and a method which is going to return true and false for the can execute. We're going to see an example of that in just a sec.
They're just implementation of the class.
Just implementation.
The class is actually, or the two, because those are the two popular ones. The code looks 99% the same. Yeah. It's just the name of the class.
So it's very historical.
We kind of come from.
Yeah, very historical. Initially, the delegate command of Prism was very good, but had maybe a little bit less features. I don't remember exactly, but I did the relay command. Now it's a very popular one, so I keep it. But yeah, absolutely. There is always, community work is always inspiring each other. Okay, so that's already all I have for the theory, actually. So now I want to go into an example, and a lot of things are going to get clearer, and also that's going to allow me to explain quite a lot of concepts. Mm-hmm. So here I have an application that I created. It's called YMVVM, and in fact, it's a fairly simple app, but it has two pages, so I'm going to navigate from one to the other. It has a model layer. And this model layer is where my data is going to come from. And in fact, what I'm going to do, I'm going to go against the service. And I'm going to get here a list of friends. So this is a service which is strongly inspired from the Facebook API. In fact, the JSON is very similar. And then I also have a possibility to save an updated friend back to my service. Now, notice that I defined those methods into an interface because you will see later I will have the possibility to have multiple implementations of that interface for different scenarios. Now, I have, of course, one implementation, which is the runtime implementation of iFriend service. I'm going to go and ping here a URL, and I have the refresh one. I'm going to take here an HTTP client. I'm going to get some result in form of a JSON string, and then I'm going to build an object, which is a list of friends. This list of friends is here, and it has basically a list here of friend objects. Now, let's take a look at the friend object. This is more interesting. This is my data object. Excuse me. And now what I have here, I'm going to take care of the ID, because I'm going to use that to save the object. I'm going to have a first name, last name, and a URI for a picture. And this is all I'm getting from my friend stream for the moment.
Yep.
Okay, so the next step now, I'm going to want to start building some UI. And in the first step, I will build this application without using MVVM so that we understand some of the disadvantages. So the first thing I want to do is go to the mainpage.xaml. I'm going to go down here to my grid, which is really the content of my page. This is, by the way, a Windows 8 application, but everything I say here is applicable to any of the XAML frameworks. I'm going to take a grid view, and here notice that I have a name for this grid view because I need to be able to identify it in my code. I have the template which is sent to this resource here named friend template. The resource is up there in the resources of my page. So I have a button, I have a grid, and then I have the first name and the last name, which are going to appear. Okay, at this point, I need to trigger the refresh method. So how am I going to do that? Well, right now, I'm not using MVVM at all, so the tool that I have at my disposal is a standard event handler. So let's do a click. Equals, I'm going to name that refresh click, and then I'm going to navigate to the event handler. I am now in what we call the code behind. We talked about that before. It's xaml.cs. And now I'm going to drag some code here. What I'm going to do is create the service. I'm going to await the refresh method because I'm awaiting here. This is asynchronous. So I'm going to say, okay, this is an async method. And then I'm going to assign the list that I get directly to the item source of my grid view.
And while you're doing that, I just was told, remind people to fill the poll, their app just now. Please fill it up. We probably have about half an hour to go. So, we're getting near the end. Make sure you fill it up and make sure you give us good feedback. We'll definitely be looking into it and making sure we can improve based on the feedback you give us. So, sorry.
Absolutely. That's really cool. All right. Now, because this is a kind of a master details view, right, I need to know at some point I will have an object which is selected, the friend which is selected. Now, where can I put that? Well, already I have a problem because I don't really have an object which is governing my application per page, or I really miss a data context here. But as I said, I don't want to go MVVM yet, so I want to stay without it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to add this object into app.xaml, which is really a global object. So it's not very elegant, but right now it will do the trick. I add my selected friend, and then inside my data template, you see that I have a button here. When I click on this button, I'm going to call an event handler, and I'm going to call that friend click. What friend click is going to do is get the source of the event, and then it's going to assign it here to app.selectedFriend. So I'm going to save that. Now, again, this is not very clean, but unfortunately, because I don't use MVVM, it's kind of the only way that I have to do this. Here, this line does a navigation, so I'm going to navigate to the next page, which is a details page. In the details page, I need to actually assign elements. So let's take a look at detailspage.xaml. Well, here what I have is the title. I have a first name and a last name. And I'm going to have to set those values. But again, I'm not using MVVM. So before we saw, well, probably doing a data binding would be the clever way to do. But here I don't want to go there yet. I just want to show, you know, the non-MVVM way to do things. So I'm going to use events here. So I'm going to go into detailspage.xaml. I'm going to have the onNavigatedTo method. And here what I do is that I get the selected friend and I assign those text boxes by name. Now we see one disadvantage here is that if I decide at some point to change the XAML, well, I have to be a programmer to do that because I will have to go into the code behind and to change this. So a designer person cannot do that easily.
Yep.
Next thing, if those text boxes change, then again, I don't have a binding here. So I need to listen to the text change event, and I'm going to do something when it changes, which is basically reassign the value of the text to the first name. And again, if my UI changes, well, I will have to do something in code, and this is not super easy. Finally, the last thing I want to do in this small application is save. So again, I have here a button. This is actually an application bar button. It's here, and here what I want to do is say click equals save click, and I'm going to go into my event handler, and here again, this is pretty straightforward. I'm going to create a new service. I'm going to await save, and the rest, I'm not going into the detail. It's just, you know, taking care of errors and checking that the IDs are actually correct. Now, here again, I have a disadvantage. Here I have to create a new model.friend service. And I also have here in the main page a creation of model.friend service. So it's not super clean. I have two objects which are here created on demand. I would probably prefer to manage them a little bit cleaner, especially if I go ahead and change the implementation of those objects. It's possible that I have to change quite a lot of code here. Okay, however, this application works. So this is already a good start, or it should at least. Let's run this on the local machine. I have my application. I right-click to show the application bar, I refresh. It is loading data, okay? Very simple data template. I can click and see the details. I can change, this is my daughter, that's her Chinese name, and let's press on save. And now if I go back, I already see, oh, something not very clean, right? Because the page is reinstantiated. I'm not saving any state here because everything is done in code behind, right? So I have, again, to refresh it to get. So it's not great, but at least it works. It is, you know, it's saved to the server, etc. So now, how can we actually improve the implementation of that? Here we go. So just to recap the problem, so a few problems here. First problem, there is really a lot of code here which is not very testable. I cannot really go ahead and do unit tests against that code. I'm using the model friend service explicitly. It would be nicer to have to use the abstraction. I have this global object here, which is kind of bothering me because it's not very clean. I don't have a design time experience. If I opened this application in Blend right now, it wouldn't loop, it wouldn't show anything. So there are a few problems. So let's convert that to an MVVM application now. And the first thing we do, let's start at the model. And like I said, you can actually implement iNotify property change directly on your data objects.
Yep.
It is fairly pragmatic. So let's do that. And here we go. Like Jaime, like Jaime mentioned before, what you need here is really just the event. And probably you will also have a utility method to raise the property change event. Now that I have that, well, here in that case, I don't have the column member name attribute. I mean, there are multiple ways to do that, definitely. Now, because I have that, let's take care of those properties that are actually going to change during the lifetime of the application, which are really first name and last name. So here, instead of using those automatic properties, what I'm going to do is raise the property change event on demand.
Yep.
Okay. Now this is, it looks big, but don't worry too much. It's because I, you know, I spread it out on multiple lines, and also I'm not using any framework here. If you use MVVM Lite, for example, then that becomes much smaller because we have quite a lot of utility to handle that. But basically what it does is really listen to that, make a safety check here, and raise a property change event if necessary. So this is a basic for a binding. The basic for a binding. Now I'm going to add a view model because now we make a view model application. So I'm going to take most of the code that I have in code behind, like for example here in mainpage.xaml.cs, and move it into an agnostic object, an object who doesn't know the view and which is called the view model. So let's add a layer. I'm going to do that here by adding a folder. I'm going to create an object, and like I said, typically we have rule of thumb is more or less one view model per view, but it is very often it deviates a little bit. So here I have my main view model, and I'm going to make that public. And again, because this is a class which is going to support data binding, I want to implement iNotify property change. So here we see something which starts to occur, which is that you always have to write quite a lot of stuff quite a lot of times. Which is a little bit a disadvantage of this pattern. And this is why we recommend using some toolkits or some frameworks to make your life a little bit easier.
Yep.
Next step, I'm going to re-implement that. So here we go. This is exactly the same code that I showed before. I'm going to have an observable collection of friends. Like we said before, this supports the iNotify collection changed event. I'm going to construct my main view model. Here we go. My code is getting a little bit messy. That's better. And here I'm going to use a technique which is called dependency injection because I want to get, like I said before, I don't want to have to instantiate this data service every time. It's very annoying. Instead, I'm going to say, let's have somebody else instantiate this object. I'm going to know from this object that it is an iFriend service, so I know only the abstraction, and I'm going to get it. So basically, I invert the, you know, the dependency. I say it's not my problem; it's your problem.
And this is, I mean, this is a preference that you have, but having IOC is not necessarily a requirement for MVVM.
So
you have plenty of MVVM, you know, great, very clean MVVM implementations
absolutely.
That don't have an IOC.
No, absolutely. So here it's a way that I prefer to do that. The reason why I do that mostly is because after that, if you use another utility class, which is for IOC container, it kind of makes things easier. But again, like you said, it's absolutely not a must. It's kind of a nice way to structure your app, but you can do things differently if you prefer.
Yep. And there's lots of, like, small IOCs. There's tiny IOC other IOCs.
That or MVVM Lite, a simple IOC, which is really small and works on every platform, so you can use it on Windows 8 as well. Absolutely, yeah.
Yep.
All right, so let's go here and implement that. Now, this default constructor here is just because since I want to keep things simple and don't have an IOC container, I'm actually going to instantiate the main view model in XAML. This is going to automatically create the friend service, inject it here, and then, like I said, it's kind of a small trick to keep things simple here. And then the next thing that I want to take care of is this selected friend. So like I said before, earlier I didn't really have a place to put it. So I put it into app.xaml, but it's not super clean. It actually belongs much more into the main view model because this is a master view, and the master view knows which object is selected, right? So let's add here a property called selected friend. This is also a property raising the property change event. And finally, the last thing I need to do here in my view model is taking care of actuating the view model, actuating some feature from the view. So until now, I did everything with events. But here, I would like to use commands because this is going to give me a much more decoupled relationship between the view and the view model. So I'm going to add the first command, which is a refresh command. And here, I'm using the relay command implementation. Like I said, implementing those I commands is a little bit annoying. You have to do it like every time. So I'm just going to add those objects using here existing item. Let's go into the data folder here. And here I have those two objects, which are actually part of MVVM Lite, but here I just extracted them and simplified them a little bit for the purpose of the demo. Now I'm going to want to refresh, so I put the refresh code into a method. There is no particular reason to do that. Relay command has here, it takes here a method. In that case, it's a delegate to a method. It's a lambda expression. Basically, what it does, this is the execute method that we talked about before. When the method is getting refreshed, I'm going to clear the observable collection. I'm going to call refresh on the data service. Again, as a view model, I don't know the implementation of that. This is just an iFriend service. And then I'm going to add the friends to the collection. Another command I need is the navigation. So I'm going to add the navigate command. Here we go. What navigate command is going to do is get a hold of the friend, which is getting clicked here. So this is a relay command of friend. It's a generic implementation of relay command. Because for every command, you have a command parameter, which is optional. You can set it or not. So here I decide to set it. It has to be a friend. I'm going to save that into the main view model. So it's going to be available on every page which is governed or which is orchestrated by this view model. And then I'm going to do the navigation using the same code as before. Finally, the last command I want to add is a save command. And here I'm going to I can use the exact same service as before, dot save of selected friend. Here we go. So here again, I have I went a little bit fast, control Y, okay. Here we go. So here I want to get rid of that because, as I said before, I don't want to actually create the data service. I'm just going to use the one that I got that was injected into me earlier. And like this, I have that already. Here I would probably have to add some error handling, like what do I show to the user if it fails, etc. But let's keep it simple for the moment. All right, so now you see one of the advantages of this pattern is that, again, right, WPF, SilverLight, and all those frameworks, XAML frameworks, are very much, you have this concept of hat, right? So here I had my hat of view model developer, but I didn't take care or I didn't even think of the UI at all at this point. I just said, hey, I want to have this functionality, refresh, save, navigate. I want to have the selected friend. I'm not going to know how it's going to be shown to the user. I don't care at this point. So this is the hat. Now I'm going to change hat and I'm going to do some UI. So I'm going to bind my main view model to the views. I'm going to establish a relationship between those two. And we mentioned already before, the way to do that is to set the data context of the page. So let's do this. The first thing I will do, because I like Blend to actually show me design time data and all that, so we saw before a way to do that using ddata context. Here I'm showing another way. I'm going to instantiate my data context, my main view model here directly into the resources of the application. It's just a choice because, so I'm going to create a relationship between this view model here in the view model space, namespace, and this app.xaml. So I need to create here to extend my XAML, right? XMLNS, it's namespace. VM equals, notice the cool features that you have, which you have IntelliSense to do that. So here I have my view model namespace that I want to use. And then again, I have IntelliSense, so VM colon main view model. Yes, this is what I want. X key equals, and I'm going to name that main. So now when the parser reaches this line, it's going to create an instance of the main view model and keep it in memory, in the resources. So now I can go into the main page, and I'm going to set the data context like we did before, data context equals, curly bracket, it's an object, binding, and the source of the binding is, curly bracket, static resource, main. Because of the hierarchy, because of the tree, it's going to look for the data context for this static resource main inside the parent of the page, which is the application, and then it's going to find it.
Yep. But just to make sure, and I'll ask you the question, what you're doing there is you're inserting your own object.
Yep.
And instantiating. So people mm-hmm. should be careful. Like, for example, if that object, it's really great for a demo.
Yep.
But if that object was making a database call or a web service
Correct.
Call or something that was real,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't want to do it at design time. You would kind of want to mock that object.
I'm going to show that bit further. So here in that case, my object is going to be created, but it doesn't do anything yet.
Okay.
Later, we are going at design time to actually mock the service call in order to create the design time data. But here, I'm not doing anything yet. Basically, I'm just creating the object and it's sitting there. And I have the refresh command, which I'm going to tap into, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the next thing that I want to do, I want to take advantage of this data context. Now, this is going to allow me to get rid of a lot of code. So let's go into mainpage.xaml.cs. And here, remember that what I did is that when I was clicking on refresh click here, I was actually going and getting the value and then assigning to list.itemSource. Now, this is code that I can get rid of. I'm just going to remove it completely. The friend click, same thing. I actually don't need that anymore, so I'm going to remove it completely. We are going to take care of that in another way. And onNavigated2, which was here for some reason, I actually don't need it here anymore. So now I have really my mainpage.xaml.cs is completely empty. It just has the call to initialize component. It's not a must, by the way. You can have animation code, things like that in the code behind. But for testable things, you should be a little bit careful. Okay, so now I'm going to go into the mainpage.xaml. Because I'm not assigning the value here of this grid view, I'm going to remove the name. And instead, I'm going to use the item source property, which we saw before, item source equals. And I'm going to create a data binding. Binding to the friends collection. So like this, I already have taken care of something. And by the way, notice that it's much more convenient because this is code, or if you do that in Blend, a designer can do that. It's markup. Most designers understand markup, or at least they understand Blend if they don't. So you can do that visually as well. I don't have to write code to do that because my data context is set to this object. So I can access the properties directly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next thing I want to do is take care of those commands. So I have here the refresh click. I got rid of that because now I don't want this code here to be on my code behind, but instead I want this code to be on my main view model, and I want to call it using a binding refresh command. So here this is much more loosely coupled. I could move things around. I can choose to use not a button, but to use something else, like whatever panel, and then I have mouse left button down, and then just call the command when that happens. Very loosely coupled. Another thing I want to take care of is this particular click event handler. And here's the reason why I want to do that. So this is a data template. And we mentioned before that data templates typically belong into resource dictionaries. But the problem is that resource dictionaries don't have code behind. So actually, I cannot implement that friend click event anywhere. While if I remove it, and instead I'm going to use this navigate command, this is now a data binding. This is a loose coupling, which allows me to take this whole data template and to move it into a resource dictionary neatly, where it's going to be used by the application when needed. And this removes probably about 50 lines of code from my XAML, so it keeps things neatly organized. Now, the navigate command, we need to be a little bit careful because remember that this command needs, just going to show the command, it needs a friend, it needs a selected friend as parameter. So again, command have parameter, and I can set that here using also a binding, and I'm going to set the command parameter to the object itself to the data context itself. In a list control, the data context is always the item, the data item, which is represented by the data template. So mm-hmm. here that's going to be the current friend, the friend which is being clicked, is going to be passed automatically to the navigate command. All right. Now, I'm going to take care of the details page. So in the details page, same thing, I can remove quite a lot of code. In fact, I'm going to remove most of it. Here, you remember I was going and getting this selected friend in the application. It's not super clean. I have to assign here directly mm-hmm. by name. It's not great. I'm going to remove all that. Okay. When the first name changes, well, it would be great if I can take care of that automatically. I'm going to do that with a two-way binding. Let's remove that. When the click event is clicked, when the click button is clicked, I'm going to call a command on the view model so I can remove this code. And now I have, again, a much cleaner details page. And let's go and set the data context on the details page. Here we go. So now what I'm going to do is bind to the same main resource that I had before. But this time I'm going to bind to the selected friend. And this is going to be my data context in this page. The save command, I have to remove here the click because I don't have that anymore. I'm going instead to call directly the save command on the view model. Oh, and here, by the way, good that I saw that. There is a small error. I need to call the save command on the main object using this syntax. Here I do everything in XAML because we have done a lot of work in Blend before. In Blend, you have actually a visual editor to do data bindings, and this is supporting all that pretty neatly. Finally, I still have here those text boxes, so I'm going to remove the name because I don't use that anymore. I'm going to remove the text change event handler. Let's do the same here for the last name text box here. And instead, I'm going to use a data binding to the first name property. And here I use a two-way mode that you mentioned earlier, yep. which means that when the text box value changes, the binding is going to be updated, and vice versa, when the value changes on the object, is going to be updated here. And let's do the same here for the last name. Okay, and that's pretty much it, actually. So now I refactored my application to MVVM already. We can try to build to see what I forgot. Oh, actually, maybe nothing. Let's cross our fingers. Let's go and see if it works. I'm going to refresh. The refresh command is actuated. My data is loaded. Same thing as before. If I dive in, I navigate. Let's remove this just for the purpose of the demo. I can save. I can navigate back, which, by the way, now it preserves the state because my state is not in the page anymore. It is in an object, which is a main view model, which is kept in the resources, right? So I have a much better state management system as well. So that is here what we have. But let's talk about a few advantages and how we can leverage those.
Yeah, and before you go, can you show them the code behind files, like main
yes.
page,
so, .cs? Yeah, so I illustrated that before when I removed, but basically here I have nothing else than the bare minimum, okay?
Yep.
In the details page, I have the bare minimum plus the go back, because I have a go back button, the go back which is handled here. So again, this is pretty much the bare minimum for a page which is not the root page. This is cleaner. This is code that I'm not going to be able to test, but it's fine because I have so little code here yep. that it's not really a big problem. Okay, so the advantages. So first of all, this main view model here is loosely coupled. It is kept in memory, so you have the state management, which is easier. I can actually go ahead and test all that. It's actually fairly easy to test. This is all plain code. I just have a bare minimum of U code somewhere, but here this navigation is not totally clean, but it's because I wanted to keep things simple. There are techniques to make that even better. So you see that it's really pretty neat. A little bit disadvantage, okay, I write a lot of code which is kind of boilerplate code, and this is where you want to probably look into frameworks like the MVVM Lite Toolkit, which help you to remove that code or to write it faster. Now, another thing which is actually neat is that I can easily add the design time experience. Let's do that quickly. I'm going to right-click, add folder. Let's call that design. And now I'm going to add a service. So here I have, into the model, I have my friend service, which is used at runtime. But now I'm going to provide another implementation of that service. Let's do a class. Let's call that design friend service. And I'm also going to implement iNotify property chain, to implement iFriend service. Here we go. Here we go. And now for the refresh method, the save method, I don't really care. At design time, I'm not going to save anything. However, at design time, I want to refresh. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to create some design time data. So before you mentioned the way in Blend to create design time data automatically, here I have a way where I write a little bit of code to create the design time data. This allows me to very precisely customize my design time data to test cases like, okay, what happens if the name is really long? Is it going to wrap neatly? What happens if I have 1 million friends, right? This is something that you cannot test at runtime properly, but you can test it here quite easily. Now that I have this design friend service, I'm going to tell to the view model, and again, here I'm using a technique that you don't have to use. There are multiple ways to do that. But here what I'm going to do is tell to the view model that when the code is running into a designer, which is what this design mode enabled property does, is a property of the Win8 framework, then I'm going to use the design friend service. Otherwise, I'm going to use the friend service. Again, I wanted to keep things simple. Normally, in MVVM Lite, we use an IOC container to do that, simple IOC, or you have, like you said, tiny IOC, or if you want to go bigger, you have also Unity, Structure Map, Castle Windsor, etc. Okay, last thing I need to do is calling the refresh method. And here, I want to be careful to do that only at design time. Because again, like you said, right, you don't want this call to the web service to happen when you run the app. So I'm going to be here just a little bit careful. I'm going to say, if I am in debug mode and I am in design mode, I'm going to call refresh. Refresh, in that case, is going to go to the design friend service. So if I build this and go into Blend, let's open here the main page into Expression Blend. Then what's going to happen is that I'm going to see some visuals. This is going to allow me to customize my design time experience neatly without having to worry too much. Here we go. We have the design time experience here. I can now go and very quickly open here the template, edit current. And for example, what we can do is add the picture of the user. So let's add here an image control. Now, I don't see anything right now, but very easily I can do my data binding. So I'm in Blend, let's use that, create data binding, picture URL, and here this is loading some dummy data, some design time data. I could go ahead and customize it and, you know, arrange the margins neatly. But what I can do here for the demo is just run the code, and I'm running here from Blend directly. And if I go and refresh, we'll see that those friends are showing up with a picture. So cool design experience. You also have the, you know, easy possibility to do some tests. That is pretty much the demo that I had. I also have a demo which is a little bit more complicated, but I'll just give it as a sample. This is a demo using portable class libraries. It has two applications, a Windows 8 app and a Windows Phone app. They are using the exact same code in the library. So I share my model, I share my view model. This is a library which is going to be used by those two applications. So here you share a lot of code because the view model pattern is agnostic of the view. The view model doesn't know anything of the view, so you can very easily share that code and have a unique experience here over all the platforms. Quickly about MVVM Lite Toolkit, Jaime is nice enough to allow me to quickly talk about that. It's an open source framework.
Oh, user.
It's an open source toolkit that I'm maintaining. The idea is really avoid having to rewrite the same code over and over again, so breaking the monotony, to keep it simple and small. It's not intrusive. You can easily select which object you want to use, which object you want to discard. And it runs on all supported XAML frameworks, so WPF, SQLite, Windows Phone, and also on Windows RT. You know, quickly, the objects that you have the relay command that we saw. There is a messenger, which is kind of a disconnected communication or decoupled communication method. The view model base, because you don't want to have to rewrite the iNotify property change implementation over and over again. There is dispatcher helper, which is helping you to do thread-to-thread communication, which is something happening quite often in modern applications because you want to run on Thread. You have the IOC container, simple IOC, very simple to use. You can also switch it with a more complex one if you need that power. Event to command, which is a special object allowing you to have not just button, command, equals, but pretty much any object and any property. And then you also have project templates and item templates and code snippets, which give you, first of all, allow you to move faster. All this wiring that I did, defining the view model and all that, is actually done into the project templates already. And also the learning effect, if people create the project template, they will see already the design time experience. They already have something which is configured properly. So that's what I had. And
yep. So a couple of comments real quick. So first of all, again, MVVM is optional.
Yep.
So for anybody that's new to SAML, if you're coming from a world where you want to use events, that's okay.
Nobody's going to harass you for that. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah, so it's very optional. But that said, it's definitely a proven pattern that we do recommend. If you're going to write a very tiny app, then there's overhead.
Yeah.
If you're going to write a kind of mid-sized app, and especially if you're going to do unit testing, then it pays up
and
very, very
quickly.
And design
time data, yeah.
Right? So on that side, because... that's where we tell people, right? Like, that's where it pays up for most people
So quick number, MVVM Lite has about 200,000 downloads. So there is really a lot of interest down there, especially for phone apps and, Windows 8 apps. This is really when it started booming. I don't have really numbers about the number of applications in the platform, but I think that and a large percentage also of people who don't use MVVM Lite use actually some flavor of MVVM. I would say that as soon as you use data binding, you're kind of drawn towards MVVM one way or the other. If you call it that or not, it's up to you. But really, it's very popular. It's very proven. A lot of people use that. And I think it's adding really productivity to mid-size applications, like you say.
Yep. And the pattern is definitely something that we are up to or that we've designed for, right? If you look at button supporting command, so we have the kind of, quote, native support for command. And then we have the data binding out of the box. And it's something we continue to invest into.
Absolutely.
Right? So it's something that we think people should leverage if it's not too much overhead. If you're running a little tiny app, it's one page, it might be a little bit of overhead. But
totally
for anything
agree.
Else, we definitely highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. The benefits are proven, and it's something we continue to invest into.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with that, I think, can you switch to this one? Because I have two slides for you. So with that, we're kind of at the end of our day, and we wanted to close with a couple things. First of all, on Twitter, we'll post where the content and the demos are. We will have to figure those out and how to connect those to MBA, but we'll make sure we make everything available early next week. And then I do want to say, people, our expectation from today was to give somebody who doesn't know a lot or to give people that want to know a little bit more some good context to go under the hood into certain areas and explain those core concepts that people need to understand. To be honest, we skipped a lot of things that we find straightforward, like looking at what are the five properties in button or stack panel or or checkbox, etc. Those are things that I feel people can very quickly just look at the API and figure out on their own. So for us, it was going under the hood and giving you that foundation that we thought was great. We don't have an illusion that everybody living today is kind of an expert. We hopefully improved a little bit. We figure out where to send you. We kind of routed you on the right direction to the right concepts and the right samples. Mm-hmm. And, we'll continue to share a little bit more on that. With that, we do want to thank the guys right here in the room. They've been doing all the video all day, so thank you very much for all the work.
They are now XAML experts.
Thanks for the virtual academy.
Yeah,
we're gonna test them now. Thanks to the virtual academy for hosting us, and we do want to encourage people to join the MBA community. There's a lot of people already registered. There's a lot of content. Like they probably have one of these or two or three of these a week. In some cases, so make sure you subscribe and you keep registering so you can get more cool information, more cool free trainings from Microsoft. And then I'm not as familiar with the point system, so you can get 50 points for today. I'm not sure what you gain after you have a specific number of points, but the code is there. It's AMLJS, so feel free to sign up.
You can get your own jumpstart with 1,000.
You get what?
You get to do your own jump start if you get 1,000 points.
Oh, with 1,000 points, you get to do your own jump start. we skipped that part, I guess. So, and then the last thing, if you haven't filled in the survey, hopefully it'll be up for just a couple minutes. I've been kind of clearing the queue with Q&A, so let me double check. Question, there's actually one. Question, Laurent, in view model locator, do we need to declare view models as static properties?
So there are really two different types of view models. This is kind of the answer that I give to that. Personally, I don't declare them as static properties. Personally, I use the IOC container to take care of creating those objects and to caching them. And again, this is for a specific type of view models, the view models that are very long-lived and throughout the application. There are other cases, Jaime showed that technique before, where you just went and said data context equals my object, right, in the code behind, which is great for when you have some more transient data context where, for example, you go to a page, you're going to stay there just a couple of minutes, then you go back, this kind of technique. So there are multiple techniques, really, so there is not a straight answer to that. Personally, I like really the IOC container approach. I find that it's a little bit cleaner than having really static properties for view models. You need to expose the view models as properties if you want to do data binding in XAML. So this is quite kind of a prerequisite, which is why I came with a concept of view model locator, which is exposing those properties and helping you to manage them. It's not an absolute must. It is nice if you want to use Blend and have this design time experience, I would say.
Yep. So I haven't done this in MVVM, but to me, view model locator, when I use it, it's a mini IOC anyway. It's kind of a simplified version, a much easier, less, much more pragmatic to go back to to that point.
No, absolutely. And by the way, the IOC container's main value is really to allow you to write less code. So again, we go to that pragmatic, image where pretty much by the view model locator is here. It's actually just a plain old object, right? You can write this by hand, or you can go ahead and use a utility, which is what I prefer to do. But it's really up to you. I mean, nothing is compulsory for sure.
Yep. And then there's one more question, which I maybe missed during the binding, or it just came up now early. And it's, how can we leverage virtualization when doing binding? So we talked about EMS controls, and we talked, for example, grid view, list view. Most of those have virtualization out of the box. Same thing for phone. If you look at list view, that we support, there's a virtualizing stack panel that pretty much anybody using lists leverages, and those will do virtualization. Now, we only do UI virtualization on all the XAML platforms. Mm-hmm. So we don't do data virtualization, but with regards to UI, we're pretty aggressive on all the platforms. So pretty much if you're using binding and you're using one of our items controls and you're actually not overriding the panels by yourself, you will get virtualization for most. There's some scenarios, for example, on Windows Store apps where if you have a grid view and you use grouping or certain, there's a few kind of scenarios where you might get into a scenario where we can no longer UI virtualize. Mm-hmm. So make sure you read the documentation and you figure out.
Yeah, there are a couple of performance white papers and performance sessions at Build also, which talk about these kind of things and how you can work around that and optimize it. Yeah.
Yep. So the guidance there, it's out there. And if you don't go too far off the rails, then it's for free. It's, you don't have to do anything and you'll get virtualization out of the box. And that's it. We've cleared our queue. We've cleared our queue here with the ones that were flagged that I'm assuming Nishan, Matthias, and Nicola hadn't answered. And we do want to thank them for all their Q&A throughout the day.
Yeah.
It looks like they did an amazing job since I'm seeing tons and tons of questions.
They must be very tired.
answered. So again, thank you very much for coming. Thanks to MBA. Thanks to you guys for the video. And hopefully you learned something.
All right.
Thanks, Laurent.
Sure. Thanks, Jaime.
Yep.